1 Kings chapter 20. We'll read verses 1 through 30. This chapter, we don't actually see Elijah or Elisha. We'll pick up with them in a few weeks. But we see all this is going on at the same time. The time that Ahab is ruling over Israel, and his wife Jezebel is ruling. But God is still on the throne. All these things are happening because I remember where he told Elijah, he said, I have 7,000 that I've left to me that have not bowed to the image of Baal. And they're going to all come, they're going to all bow to him, and they will look to him. And all men are in the Lord's hands. Even wicked men, he said, Pharaoh, I've raised you up for this purpose. I've let you be born for this purpose. You're a vessel of wrath, and you're going to serve my purpose. And you're going to do it. That man did exactly what he wanted to do. But in doing that, he fulfilled the Lord's will. So today I've just entitled the message or the lesson, Ben-Hadad. Chapter 20, verse 1. And Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, gathered all his hosts together, and there were 32 kings with him, and horses and chariots. And he went up and besieged Samaria, which was the capital of Israel, and warred against it. And he sent messengers to Ahab, king of Israel, into the city, and he said unto him, Thus saith Ben-Hadad, Thy silver and thy gold is mine. Thine wives also and thy children, even the goodliest, are mine. And the king of Israel answered and said, My lord, O king, according to thy saying, I am thine and all that I have. That's probably how he said it. And the messengers came again and said, Thus speaketh Ben-Hadad, saying, Thou, although I have sent unto thee, saying, Thou shalt deliver me thy silver and thy gold and thy wives and thy children. Yet I will send my servants unto thee tomorrow about this time, and they shall search thine house and the houses of thy servants. And it shall be that whatsoever is pleasant in thine eyes, they shall put it in their hand and take it away. Then the king of Israel called for the elders of the land, and he said, Mark, I pray you, and see how this man seeketh mischief. For he sent unto me for my wives, and for my children, for my silver, and for my gold, and I denied him not. And all the elders and all the people said unto him, Hearken not unto him, don't listen to what he says, don't give in to his demands. Wherefore he said unto the messengers of Ben-Hadad, Tell my lord the king, all that thou sent for to thy servant to do at the first, I will do. But this thing I may not do. And the messengers departed and brought him word again. And Ben-Hadad sent unto him, and he said, The gods do so unto me, and more also, if the dust of Samaria shall suffice for handfuls for all the people that follow me. And the king answered, and the king of Israel, Ahab, answered and said, Tell him, Let him not that girdeth on his harness boast himself as he that putteth it off. And it came to pass when Ben-Hadad heard this message, as he was drinking, he and the kings in his pavilion, that he said unto his servant, Set yourself in array. And they set themselves in array against the city. And behold, there came a prophet unto Ahab, king of Israel, saying, You know, it's amazing that God would send that wicked man a prophet. A messenger. He's not looking for a prophet. He's actually depending on his own wisdom to get him out of this mess. And behold, there came a prophet unto Ahab, king of Israel, saying, Thus saith the Lord, Hast thou seen all this great multitude? Behold, I will deliver it into thy hand this day. And thou shalt know, and you'll know when this is done, that I'm the Lord. Verse 14, and Ahab said, By whom? And he said, Thus saith the Lord, even by the young men of the princesses of the province, Then he said, who shall order the battle? And he said, you will, thou wilt. Then he numbered the young men of the princes of the province, and they were 232. After them he numbered all the people, even all the children of Israel, being 7,000. And they went out at noon, but Ben-Hadad was drinking himself drunk in the pavilion, he and the kings and the 32 kings that helped him. And the young men of the princes of the province went out first, and Ben-Hadad sent out, and they told him, saying, these are men come out of Samaria. And he said, whether they come out for peace, take them alive, or whether they be come out for war, take them alive. So these young men of the princes of the province came out of the city, and the army which followed them. And they slew every one his man, and the Syrians fled, and Israel pursued them. And Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, escaped on a horse with his horsemen. The Lord had let him live for another day. He could have died in the battle, but he didn't. And the king of Israel went out and smote the horses and the chariots and slew the Syrians with a great slaughter. And the prophet came to him again, the king of Israel, verse 22, and he said unto him, go strengthen thyself and mark and see what thou doest. For at the return of the year, a year from now, the king of Syria will come up against thee again. And the servants of the king of Syria said unto him, they said unto Ben-Hadad, their gods are the gods of the hills. Therefore they were stronger than us, but let us fight them in the plain, and surely we shall be stronger than they. And do this, take the king away, every man out of his place, and put captains in their rooms, and number thee an army, like the army that thou hast lost, horse for horse, chariot for chariot, and we will fight against them in the plain. And surely we shall be stronger than they. And he hearkened unto the voice, and he did so. And it came to pass at the return of the year that Ben-Hadad numbered the Syrians and went at the Aphex to fight against Israel. And the children of Israel were numbered and were all present and went against them. And the children of Israel pitched before them like two little flocks of kids. But the Syrians filled the whole country. And there came a man of God and said unto the king of Israel, thus saith the Lord, because those Assyrians have said, the Lord is the God of the hills, but he's not the God of the valleys. Because of this will I deliver all this great multitude into thy hand, and you shall know that I am the Lord. And they pitched over against the other 7 days, and so it was that on the seventh day the battle was joined, and the children of Israel slew of the Assyrians 100,000 footmen in one day. And the rest fled to Aphex into the city. And there a wall fell upon 27,000 and the men that left. And Ben-Hadad fled and came into the city into an inner chamber. Today we'll be looking at this man, Ben-Hadad. God sent a prophet to Ahab, but never sent one to Ben-Hadad. God will use this man, Ben-Hadad, to scourge Israel and to scourge Ahab. He was a wicked man, a proud, arrogant, presumptuous man. He said, oh, this is what I'm going to do. He presumed. Here in this man, Ben-Hadad and King Ahab, we see men who look to their own strength and they depend upon their own wisdom to get themselves out of a mess. But it's amazing, as I've mentioned when we read these verses, that God sent him a prophet. Now, his name's not mentioned. Most believe it was Micah, because you'll see over, it's in 1 Kings, I think it's 22, verse 18. It says, the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, they're going into battle. That is when Ahab meets his Waterloo. He said, there is yet a man, Micah, the son of Ismah, by whom we may inquire the Lord. Jehoshaphat said, all these other men were prophesying. He said, is there not anybody else that knows God? Does anybody else have a word from God? He said, yeah, that guy Micah. but he never speaks good concerning me. All he speaks is evil, what he would call evil. And most believe that's who this man was. His name's not mentioned because really he's not important. But what is important, that no matter how dark it was, we don't know at this point, we don't know where Elijah and Elisha's at. But God still sent this man a preacher. He still sent him a prophet and told him what was going to happen. And he said, when it's all said and done, you'll know this. You'll know that I'm the Lord. You think about all the instances that God has showed Ahab that he's God, and this man still don't believe. But God still delivers him. Why? For the sake of his people and for God's own namesake, not because of Ahab, not because of him. We're going to look at some things from these verses as we see concerning the gospel. Number one, it's foolish for men to think that they can go against and stand against the true and living God. Why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? As I've already mentioned, like Pharaoh, how could a man be so stupid to see God open up the Red Sea and he actually think that he can go in there, in that sea, and destroy the children of God? He leaves men to themselves. You would not think that anyone would be so foolish as to think that they can go and come up against the holy Lord God. Every rejection of God's counsel is rebellion and it is utter insanity. You don't think men can get any dumber? Just wait. They act insane because they are. All men without Christ are insane. They're not in their right mind. They're just like the Gadarene man. Lost. Let me read you this. In Acts chapter 4, verse 26, the kings of the earth stood up and the rulers were gathered together against the Lord and against his Christ. For a truth to the holy child Jesus, whom thou hast anointed, both Herod and Pontius Pilate with the Gentiles and the people of Israel were gathered together. All of them were gathered together. Against God's Christ, against God, yeah. That included all of us. That describes us. But listen in Proverbs. Now listen. Proverbs 1. Because I've called and you refused, I have stretched out my hand and no man regarded. But you have set at naught my counsel, and with none of my reproof. I will also laugh at your calamity. I'll mock when your fear cometh. Like I said, we're going to see that Ahab is spared now, but just in a little while, we're going to see where Ahab meets his Waterloo, because God's done told Elijah, you go anoint Hazael as king over Israel. Over Syria. Jehu, king over Israel, and Elisha. And he's going to take care of all the house of Ahab. He's going to take care in his own time. It may seem like they get by for a while, but in God's time. When your fear cometh as desolation, and your destruction cometh as a whirlwind, when distress and anguish cometh upon you, then you're going to call on me, but I won't answer. They shall seek me early, but they won't find me. For they hated knowledge. Do you hear that? They hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would none of my counsel. They despised my reproof. Therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way, be filled with their own devices. For the turning of the way of the simple shall slay them, and the prosperity of fools shall destroy them. But whoso hearkeneth unto me shall dwell safely, and shall be quiet from fear of evil. We see this in men trying to come up against God. He says, I'll laugh at your calamity. You imagine being hated. I'm going to destroy Israel. When I get done with them, I'm going to grind them like powder. They're nothing. That's what he thought. But he's going to find out differently. The second thing we see is that the grace of God is often revealed is acting for us in spite, and this is how it always is, he reveals his grace in spite of our ignorance. In spite of it. God does what he does. Why does he do it? For his own namesake. That's the reason. 1 Samuel 12:22. For the Lord will not forsake his people, Israel. There's 7,000. He won't forsake them. For his great namesake, because it pleased the Lord to make you his people. That's why he wouldn't leave them alone. Why? And it seems, you go, why would he? Both of these men are lost, but why would he help Ahab? He would went along with his wife to have all the prophets killed. And you think, well, where was Micah at? He could have been one of the 100 that was hid in one of the caves by Obadiah. We don't know. But we do know this, God preserved him. He preserved him just for this, to be a preacher to a man named Ahab. And when he finally meets his Waterloo, you remember the story that Ahab, he knows he's going to face the Syrians again. And he wants Jehoshaphat to help him. Now, Jehoshaphat is the king over Judah, over the southern tribes. And Ahab said, here's the plan. Here's how men act. I want you to dress up like me. So they'll think when we go into battle that you're me and I'm you. So then everybody gathers up around Jehoshaphat. And he says, whoa, I didn't sign up for this. He said, I'm not Ahab, I'm Jehoshaphat. And the guy standing there and he goes, man, it just makes me mad. And he did like that with a bow and let it rip. You know what it did? He had hit the target. He had hit Ahab. He thought he could disguise himself and protect himself. But it was his day to die. God preserved this man till he was done with him. We need to see that. And he always does it. Not for him, but for his namesake. This man, Ben-Hadad, most believe he's Ben-Hadad Jr. because back in chapter 15, verse 18, Asa, who was the king, I think, of Israel. Now listen what he did. He took all the silver and the gold that was left in the treasuries of the house of God and the treasuries of the king's house and delivered them unto the hand of his servants. And King Ahaz sent them to Ben-Hadad, the son of Techlon, the son of Hezron, king of Syria, that dwelt in Damascus, saying, there is a league between me and thee, and between my father and thy father. Behold, I've sent unto thee a present of silver and gold. Come and break the league with Baasha, king of Israel, that he may depart from me. I'm sorry, Asa was king of Judah. And the king of Israel was coming down against Asa, and he said, I need you to help me. So he pays him off with the silver and the gold. And most believe that's why Ben-Hadad Jr. thought he could do the same thing. Won't you to pay me? You pay me and I'll leave you alone. No, he won't. But that's what he pretends to do. Ahab gives in to the request of the king. And the reason he does that, why would men do that? To save their side. To save themselves. That's what he's doing. Well, if I pay him off, he'll leave me alone. He don't care about anybody else. It's just like if you remember when Ahab's out looking for water, him and Obadiah, he's not caring about Israel. He's just caring about his animals. Make sure my animals don't die so we'll find some water. He don't care about anybody else. He just cared about saving his own skin. When Ben-Hadad saw that he had the king Ahab right where he wanted him, the silver and the gold, he's going to give him everything. He wanted more. Isn't that how it is? The enemy's never satisfied. He always wants more. He said, that's not enough. I don't just want the silver and the gold, and I just don't want your children. I'm going to send my servants in there, and anything that you like, I'm going to take it. And basically, he said, there's not a thing you can do about it. Not one thing. That's how this man thinks. You know why he'd do that? He doesn't know God. He doesn't know God. Ahab knew that Ben-Hadad was requiring more than he was able to give. So that's why he inquired of the elders. And then in verse 9, he seems to have blamed the elders. Basically, he said, the reason I can't, what you first requested, and I can give you. But I can't give you what you ask in the second request because my elders won't let me do it. Let's blame them. It's not my fault. If it was up to me, I'd give it all to you. That's sad, isn't it? That's sad. But can you imagine what Ben-Hadad thinks when he says, no, you're not giving me what I've demanded? It infuriates him. And his response now is, I'm gonna teach you a lesson. I'm going to grind you to powder. When I'm through with you, you'll be nothing. Nothing. Can you imagine just for a second being a child of God and the children of Israel having a king like that? He's no different than King Saul. All those kings, when you read them, the majority of them, it says, the first thing it said about them, they did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. Very few, especially the northern kingdoms, very few knew God. Very few feared God. But then he shows some semblance of courage there in verse 11. Now watch this. And the king of Israel answered and said, now do you go tell Ben-Hadad, let not him that girdeth on his harness boast as if he put it off. You know what basically he's saying so you can understand it? He said, don't count your chickens before they hatch. He's glorying in his victory before the battle's ever won. He did have that much sense. He said, don't boast too big, boy. Don't boast too big. Ben-Hadad was not moved by his response. He calls his 32 kings, his tribal lords, to have a pre-victory party. They're all getting drunk, knowing full well that Israel was just a lamb to the slaughter. He's told his soldiers to get ready to fight. Well, he's over there getting drunk. Someone said, man proposes and God disposes. They propose, this is what we're going to do. And as I thought about this, they were, you can imagine them. Can you imagine before you going into battle? Well, let's just get drunk. Let's just get intoxicated. You know, that's what he's acting like. He's acting just like a drunk man. He's acting like a man who's out of his mind. And he is. He's drunk with the wine of the false doctrine of this world. They're drunk with it. Drunk with it. Let me give you this example. In Daniel chapter 5, verse 1, there was a man named Belshazzar. Who was over Babylon, who was over the children of Israel in Babylon. And God had raised this man up for a purpose. It said, Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before the thousands. He called all of his lords in. And Belshazzar, while he tasted the wine, he commanded to bring the gold into silver vessels, which was his father Nebuchadnezzar's, and which he had taken out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem, that the king and the princesses and his wives and his concubines might drink from those instruments. Then they brought the golden vessels just taken out of the temple, the house of God, which was at Jerusalem. And the king and his princesses and his wives and his concubines drinking them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver and brass and iron and wood and of stone. In the same hour came forth the fingers of a man's hand, and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Then the king's countenance was changed. He sobered up real quick. And his thoughts troubled him, so that all his joints and his loins were loosed, and his knees smote one against another. And they can't understand what this writing means. So they call a man named Daniel. In verse 22. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart. Thou knowest all this. You knew what happened to your father. You knew how God humbled Nebuchadnezzar, and he taught. You knew this, but you didn't learn from it. You've lifted up thyself against the Lord of heavens, and they have brought forth the vessels of his house before thee, and you think you can just treat the things of God anyway. And thy lords and thy wives and their concubines have drank and wine in these vessels. And you've praised the gods of silver and gold and brass and wood and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know. And the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose all thy ways thou hast not glorified. And here's what the writing said. God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. You're weighed in the balance, and you've been found wanting. The kingdom is divided and given that night. The Medes and the Persians will march in and kill Belshazzar, and he'll be dead before the sun comes up. And he's getting drunk. Making light of the things of God, that's what Ben-Hadad's doing. And that's what men are doing today. They act like they're drunk. They misuse the things of God. They think they can just use them any way they see fit. That is the children of God. Israel is the people of God. And they think they, if he had his way, he would kill every one of them. Every one of them. But then we see God's prophet. The Lord sent his prophet. Oh, what grace. To tell them and to tell him and to instruct him. He said, the Lord's going to give you the victory. And when it's all done, you'll know it's not because of you. It's because for my namesake. There's something interesting here about the use of numbers, how he's recorded these numbers here in Scripture. Ben-Hadad had with him 32 kings, 32 rulers. Ahab was to choose 232 servants, not fighters. They're called princesses. They were just average Joes, just average men. These were not warriors. Well, why would he choose those men? That God gets all the glory, that no flesh glory in his sight. 232. And the rest of Israel's army, he gives us the number of 7,000. Isn't that strange? And it just so happens that he reserved 7,000 who had not bowed to the image of Baal. When Ben-Hadad heard that the children of Israel was approaching, he wasn't afraid. He was so confident of the victory that he was drunk along with his 32 buddies. He's not worried. He's not worried. You know why? He assumed that Israel, and he assumed Israel's God was just like Ahab. Think about, what do you think those Indians, when that lived in South America and down around Mexico, what do you think they thought about when those Spaniards came in and took up? What do you think they thought about their gods? You know, they came in and just annihilated them. I saw a statue of, it showed them big Spaniards with their guns and everything. You know what they were doing? They're standing on the heads of the Mayan Indians, just crushing them. What does that say? They thought about their gods. Well, if that's the way their God is, I don't want nothing to do with their God. But this man, he thinks, well, their God's just like Ahab. He's just a wishy-washy thing. They think that you serve a God, but he's just another one of the many gods. That's what they think. That's what the world thinks. They think we're just like everybody else. Everybody claims to be religious. Everybody's talking about religion now. Everybody's talking about their God and their Jesus. And they think our God is just like theirs. No, he's not. God's going to display to Ahab and to Ben-Hadad who God is. There's nothing. They think there's nothing to it. Israel's army, that small group of army, 7,232 men. It said they killed man for man. That means every man killed one man. That means that they killed an exact number, 7,232 men, men for men. And they defeated the whole Syrian army. They're terrified now. I bet you he sobered up real quick. Presumption. It's like I just read to you about Belshazzar. Don't you think he sobered up real quick when he seen something, the hand, when men begin to see the handwriting on the wall, when they begin to see it, that old phrase, they begin to see the handwriting on the wall, it's a different story. It's a different story. Now, Ben-Hadad's strength is now turned to nothing. And he and a few men left, they flee into hiding. But the prophet tells, or Ahab would have never known this. He said, don't take this lightly. He's going to come back in a year. He's going to strengthen his forces. He's going to get rid of the kings, and he's going to get some more men. And when he come back, he's coming back. And you better make preparation for it. He's coming. He's not done. He's coming back. He's coming back. Then Ben-Hadad listens to the logic of his servants. Now, you can imagine as he sits around with his generals or whatever and says, we lost the last battle, and how are we going to win this battle? Why did we lose the last battle? And the other guy says, well, the best I can figure out is those Hebrew gods, they're the god of the hills. Now, if we can just get them down there in the valley, their gods are not the gods of the valleys, well, then we can defeat them. That's what they thought. That's what they thought. They defeated us on the mountains, and we'll fight with them in the valley. They thought that was a brilliant strategy. Oh, that's so smart. Because they thought the Israelites was all about the mountains. They thought about Mount Sinai, and they thought about Carmel. Yeah, he's on Carmel. Oh, he revealed his strength. And oh, it was just because they was on another mountain. All we have to do is get them in the valley, and we'll defeat them. And you know what I thought about? I thought about in Matthew 17, where our Lord took Peter, James, and John up on a mountain, remember? And he was transfigured before them. Well, what about the other disciples? If you want to say it, they're down in the plains. They're down in the valley. It says, after 6 days, Jesus take Peter, James, and John, his brother, and bringeth him up into a high mountain apart. He was transfigured before him, and his face did shine as the sun. His raiment was white as the light. And behold, there appeared unto him Moses, Elias, talking with him. And in verse 14, and when they were come to the multitude, they come down off the mountain. There came to him a certain man bowing, kneeling down and saying, Lord, have mercy on my son, for he's a lunatic and sore vexed, for oftentimes he falleth into the fire and often into the water. And I brought him to thy disciples, and they couldn't cure him. Why couldn't they win the battle? That's what they assumed. Then Jesus answered and said, O faithless and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? Bring him hither to me. And Jesus rebuked the devil, and he departed out of him. That's God. It don't matter where he's on the mountain or in the valley. It don't matter. He's still God. You can't put God in a box. That's what men think, isn't it? You put God in a box, and God can't do something. God does whatever he pleases. Whatever he pleases. And Jesus rebuked the devil, and it departed out of him, and the child was cured from that one very hour. And as I thought about this, I wonder if Satan, you know, what did he think when Elijah was on the mountain? You know, God displayed his greatness on Mount Carmel. You know what I'll do? And it didn't take long. I'll get him down here in the valley. I'll get him over here under a juniper tree. And I'll see where his God's at then. You know, I know Satan is brilliant. I don't want to give him too much credit, but he's still stupid. He's God's devil, and God uses him any way he sees fit. Did he not think that God would be with Elijah there under the juniper tree? Is he not in a dark, dark valley? Oh, I can get him in the valley. Oh, I'll defeat him. No, what I read earlier is God came to Elijah when he was in the valley. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The same Lord that leads his sheep beside the still water leads them through the valley of the shadow of death. Ben-Hadad and his army are acting insane. They actually think this. that they can defeat God? We've got a plan. Here was Satan's plan. We want to persuade everybody. Everybody's going to be gathered together against Christ, and we want you to say, "Crucify him." And I'll have him. I'll have him right where I want him. But can you imagine when the Lord Jesus Christ cried, "It is finished," I can see Satan say, "What have I done?" He was ambushed. It says if they knew what they were doing, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. I thought this was interesting. Someone said the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over again and expecting a different result. Do you think the second time you go into battle with Israel that it's going to be any different? Ben-Hadad and his army, they thought the true and living God was just like their little gods. Since Babylon, men have sought many gods, one to cover every occasion. They have the God of the hills, they have the God of the valleys, they have the God of the rivers, they have the God of the seas, they have the God of the fire, they have the God of the wind, they have the God of love, the God of hate, the God of war, and the God of peace. Don't they? That's what Paul dealt with on Mars Hill. And what I want you to see is what they were dealing with right then are the very same things we deal with today. Zeus and Apollo and all those, what do they call them? Didn't they call them gods? Didn't they worship them as gods? I think Dagon was a half man and half fish. Listen. Paul stood in the midst of Mars Hill, and he said, "You men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you're too superstitious. You're too religious. You know what? Oh, superstitious. Let's get them in the valley and we'll defeat them." Isn't that superstitious? "Well, I'll get you over here, Jeff, and everything will be fine. I'll whoop you over here." That's just superstitious, because God never changes. Listen, he said, "For I passed by and beheld your devotions. I found an altar with this inscription, 'To the unknown God, whom therefore you ignorantly worship.'" That one you worship, you say there's an unknown God out there that we don't know something. Maybe there's one out there we don't know about, and we don't want to offend him. He said, that's the one I'm going to preach to you. I'm going to tell you about that unknown God. He's unknown to you, but I'm going to tell you about him. I'm going to introduce that God to you. God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he's Lord of heaven and earth, and he dwells not in temples made with hands, neither is he worshipped with man's hands, as though God needed anything. Seeing he giveth life, he giveth to all life and breath and all things, and he hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on the face of the earth, and he hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of men's habitation. Why? That they should seek the Lord, if haply they may feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us. You mean he's preaching a God that's not far off? He's preaching a God that's near to us. How near? He came and walked upon the earth. That's how near he is. They thought, "Oh, it's just some mystical God way out there." Oh, no, no, no. Not this God. "For in him we live and move and have our being. As certain also of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. There is but one God, and he will not stand for any rivals." The prophet comes to Ahab and tells him, "Since they said that God is the God of the hills and God's not the God of the valleys, I'm going to deliver them into your hand." Why? The Lord is a man of war. The Lord is his name. Psalms 24:1, the Lord, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. And then when they went into battle, Ben-Hadad's men fled. They killed 100,000. That's a pretty good crop of men. 100,000 men had to die because of a man's stupidity. 100,000 men because he wanted to take what was not rightfully his. He thinks, when you get down to it, the main thing is, Ben-Hadad thinks he's God. You know, the problem today is, when you get down to it, here's the root of the matter, men think they're God. And they need to find out, if you ever meet the true God, you'll find out you're not God. You don't even resemble a God. You resemble more of a devil than a God. It is folly to go up against God. Then when they were running, they run into the city. They thought they would find refuge. You know what happened in the refuge? He's not only the God of the hills. He's not only the God of the valleys. He's the God of a wall. And he caused the whole wall to fall on 27,000 of them. What does that say? You can't escape his judgment. I can see them all sitting down. Well, what happened, Ben-Hadad? What happened to all you counselors? You said that he wasn't the God of the valleys. It doesn't matter. You know what he's saying? We've never faced a God like this. Listen, Isaiah 45, verse 5. I am the Lord and there is none else. There's no God beside me. I girded thee, though thou hast not known me, that they may know from the rising of the sun and from the west that there is none beside me. I'm the Lord and there is none else. And here's how he described, I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, do these things. If you read that verse to most men, they'd say, oh, that's not my God. I form the light and create darkness. You think it's an accident Ben-Hadad was born? No, it wasn't no accident. It was on purpose. It was an accident that Ahab was king of Israel? Oh, no. He's going to use him. The Lord, I, the Lord, do all these things. Drop down, you heavens from above, and let the skies pour down righteousness. Let the earth open. Let them bring forth salvation. Let the righteousness spring up together. I, the Lord, have created it. Now watch this. Woe to him that striveth with his maker. Isn't that what it says in Romans 9? The potsherds of this earth say, what right do you have to make me this way? He makes one vessel unto honor. The master, he takes the clay and he puts it on a wheel and he makes one vessel unto honor and he makes one unto dishonor. Isn't that right? And you potsherds of the earth say, you don't have any right to do that. You don't have any rights. God has every right to do with you as he sees fit. Jesus Christ bought you. Bought you. You're his. Woe unto him that strives with his makers. Let the potsherds strive with the potsherds of the earth. Shall the clay say that him that fashioned it? What makest thou? Or thy work? He hath no hands. God wouldn't do that. Our God does do that. Any time in history, pick out any time. The things are not different now than they've ever been. It's the same thing. It's sin. And we deal with men that are depraved and they think they're gods. Whether it's a Mussolini, whether it's a Hitler, or whoever it is, they were raised up for God's purpose. And when God's done with them, he put them down. And this world exists for the salvation of his people. And when it comes time, he's going to take care of Ahab, Jezebel, Ben-Hadad, and every one of them. Let me leave you with this. God will honor himself in spite of our weakness and in spite of us being so cowards. Not for your sakes do I this, saith the Lord. Be it known unto you. Be ashamed and confounded of all your ways, O house of Israel. The Lord, he is the God. And when he's done, he said, you'll know that I'm the Lord. And you know, men can see God do all these things and it never change them. And that's sad. Amen.